This week, we cancel our trip to Disneyland. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 80. Today is February 13th, 2015. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
Our break music is provided once again by the Polish ambassador.
Hope you all enjoying that.
It is Friday the 13th, and we're going to try our luck at solving a problem that has been in the news a lot recently. With the measles outbreak that started at the happiest place on Earth, and spread to a lot of California and several other states, a lot of people are talking about the anti-vaccine movement. Are you guys talking about it?
We are.
I'm not talking about it.
No?
No.
We're talking about it in my house, about how much we agree about it.
Oh, okay.
I have a sister who's big into it.
Into vaccines?
Into the anti-vax movement.
Oh, anti-vax? Really?
Ooh. Okay. You can friend her on Facebook if you'd like to read some of the stuff.
Maybe we should have her on the show.
Maybe. If I had known in advance that this is what we were going to talk about, maybe I could have invited her.
Well, I only sent you the email a week and a half ago.
She lives in Troy. It's a long way away.
Okay. So a guy named Gary Fox sent us a link on Twitter to a video of him ranting about the whole anti-vax movement. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. It's called Vaccines, Liberty, and Government Authority. He rambles quite a bit at the beginning about his suspicions and conspiracy theories. But right at the eight-minute mark, he gets to the point. And, I'll just let you listen. He says,
"You ought to be terribly alarmed, America, that there are so many people openly calling for a government to be authorized to come into people's houses against their will, haul their kids out of there, and stick them with needles. What is going on in this country? You've got some idiot at the USA Today calling for parents who don't vaccinate their kids to be jailed. Where are we? You say you're worried about measles? How about being worried about tyranny? I assure you, a government that is authorized to hold people down and stick them with needles is a bigger problem than measles or mumps.
Yeah!
Preach it, Gary Fox.
Ooh.
Hell yeah. He then goes on to say,
"You know, the crazy thing about it is that measles outbreak, you can guarantee yourself that that came from the illegal Mexicans coming up here.
They took our jabs and caused measles."
Oh, no. Man, I was totally with you until his video became a hate crime. I don't know. He made some fairly good points throughout the video, and then, you know, his final point there, I was totally on board with it, but then he just ruined it for me with the comment about the Mexicans.
But I think that dichotomy of those two statements kind of sums it up in some kind of cartoonish way.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
He's ranting against the government trying to protect its people in the way it best sees fit, you know, by trying to push a measles and mumps vaccination.
Well, you're assuming why they're pushing it, but go on.
All right, sure. Well, all right. Wait, we can get into that, too. So, if you give them the benefit of the doubt and believe that's what they say, why they're giving us these vaccines, you know, what... Oh, yes, please.
Okay.
I almost got pushed some cake there. But what's the force that what's the main force that's keeping that's enforcing a border and keeping these illegal Mexicans that he thinks is bringing the measles and mumps into the country, which is a country? What forms that country? It's the government. The government.
Well, they're doing a terrible job of it. It's not our government.
It might be true, but it's the border fence that they want to put up. It's the border agents they want to put down there. It's the drones they want to fly. All those things are government agencies. So
right.
So and this is where this libertarian argument really seems to fall apart in a lot of ways is that there's kind of a ranting against the government, but government, please protect me in these other fears I have, because I guess I just don't fear the measles.
Yeah, there's maybe a little bit of hypocrisy there, that, you know, on the one hand, the government shouldn't be, you know, sticking our kids with needles, right. But at the same time, we want them to, you know, effectively guard our border and
right.
prevent the Mexicans
right.
from coming in right. and infecting us.
So wait, haven't you said before that's the role of a federal government is to provide for the common defense?
That's why, and this is why.
No, I've said that right. the only legitimate purpose of government is to protect the rights of the individual.
Yes, so this is why this is such a great topic, because it really shows the divide between your anarchist and more libertarian side versus your constitutionalist. Because you're the constitutionalist guy. The Constitution says protect the border. It says it right in there. No, it doesn't say protect the border, but you know what I mean. That kind of thing. You know, that's a constitutional power of the federal government. But if you believe the federal government is an agent of tyranny, you don't. You know, it doesn't matter if it's in the Constitution or not. It's
well, and I also don't believe we should be controlling immigration.
Right.
So that function is illegitimate, as far as I'm concerned.
So it's weird that this vaccine thing starts to shine a little light on the split between a. You know, a constitutional conservative and a more libertarian, get the government off my back no matter what the Constitution says. Right? Right. Right.
I don't know. What it did for me was it stereotyped Mr. Fox here. You know, his last comment, it just pigeonholed him for
right.
me. Now, maybe that's not fair. Maybe I need to go back and watch some more of his videos. But, you know, just that one comment, it just, you know, it sounds very xenophobic to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, couple that with his previous statement, you know,
well,
he could almost come across as a skinhead or something, you know.
But
I'm not saying he is,
no,
but I'm just saying.
I was thinking about what I was trying to form a thought, believe
okay.
it or not, but
don't hurt yourself.
I know, it's exhausting. So it's not okay for him to say because it's because of the illegal Mexicans, which I agree, it's not okay to, you know, completely pin it on that. We don't know how it came
right.
about, but it by the same time, it's not okay to pin it on all the anti-vaxxers. Why is that okay?
Why not?
Well, here's an argument I heard. It the other side of it was, well, if your child has been vaccinated, then you don't have anything to worry about.
Well,
I heard the argument was, well, no, they're still exposed to it then, and so that doesn't mean they're protected. Well, then what?
Well, there is some non-zero number of people who have been vaccinated but still contract the disease.
Yes.
Right, and it's a disease we feel like we could almost wipe out.
But
right?
but it's not, I mean, you can't know if you're one of those people. That's not something you know in advance.
Okay.
It's only after you vaccinate and then you catch the disease anyway that you realize, oh, I'm one of those people, the vaccine doesn't work on me.
Okay, so the end result is the same.
Right.
So how can you pin that? You can't pin it on anti-vaxxers.
No, but what I'm saying is the people who would say that are that's the class of people they're trying to defend. Because if everybody's vaccinated, then that small number of people aren't at risk.
Right.
But you can't know who those people are
sure.
in advance, so it's not a valid argument in my mind.
Okay.
I also heard or read some argument that you may have seen about peanut allergies.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's your now in our modern society, it's your public duty to be careful what you're doing with your peanuts. I'm always careful with my peanuts.
You need to enunciate very well in this next segment.
But you think about it, you wonder, you make sure that you're aware of people who might have peanut allergies, and you try to avoid it if you can. It's like a public courtesy to people that are around you. There's a little peanut free table at the school. Like, why if I can't bring my peanut butter, why can you bring your little measles kid in? Why there could be a public school rule. Hey, you can't come in here if you have a gun or you haven't been vaccinated.
Well, I thought there was.
Is there in the schools?
Thank you.
Is there in the schools? What?
I don't remember.
I think there's a form you have to fill out, but I don't know if you can just say, hey, I'm not doing it, and just show up anyway.
I think it depends on the... Well, I'll admit ignorance on that. For the most part. I know there are states right now that are trying to enact laws to prevent kids who aren't vaccinated from being allowed in school.
I think they ask you for your immunization records, kind of as like a safe thing. You fill it in. But I think if you haven't had it, I don't think they can keep you out.
Right. Well, right.
What about all public facilities? What about parks? What about Disneyland?
And California also additionally has a provision, and it's one of the most liberal in the country. Imagine that, California. But all you have to do is fill out the paperwork for a religious exemption, and you don't have to worry about it. Mm-hmm. You can bring your kid to school, no questions asked. They can't say anything about it.
Okay. So what if everybody becomes religious? Then we're in the same.
Yeah. Well, so there's a lot of people objecting to that. And saying that law in California should change, and oh, by the way, every other state should, get on the bandwagon and prevent.
And, well, there have been flashes of this before with Christian Scientists, and a child becomes ill, and there's a debate, well, can the state step in and take the child away and give them treatment, and then, or child dies, should the parents be brought up on charges?
You're talking about the ones that don't believe in doctors, don't believe in modern medicine.
Right. Yeah. Christian Scientists.
So, to me, I love this issue, quite frankly, because it speaks to my liberal mind in such a profound way. In that, it's causing a question about what it means to live in a public life, whether that's in a country or a community, or whatever it means, whatever price you have to pay to be in a public community. And we all pay those certain prices. Sometimes it's prices like taxes. Sometimes it's a vaccine that you take as a courtesy to your fellow man. And some of the more libertarian arguments are like, I personally don't need to succumb myself to whatever this hardship is, whether it's a shot, whether it's a tax. Now, I'm certainly going to reap the benefits of a safe society where people aren't running around with measles all the time. I'm certainly going to reap those benefits for myself, but I personally don't have to do it. I don't have to sign up on my own. So, if it's something like taxes, if you're more of an anarchist guy, you don't even like the national defense. But there's a lot of things that your taxes do to help the community, whether it's schools or whatever it is, might be inefficient, but there's a lot of reaping of the rewards that the community's paying in while standing on one's high horse to say, I don't really need to participate in this sacrifice that everybody's making for the common community.
Are you saying that you get vaccinated to benefit other people?
Oh, I think it's part of it. I think some of it is like I want to protect my own kid, but you're also But you're also saying, I want this to be over. I don't want this to be a thing. The doctors want me to do it. I believe in the doctors. All right, go ahead.
No, that's fine. I'm just...
And on a parallel thread, if you want to think about this, it also goes into the kind of the global warming type anti-science thinking. Like do we... And good old listener Eric's great comment of, like, when do we trust scientists and when do we don't? For things like global warming, there's all kinds of debate whether we trust the scientists. Well, here we're talking about doctors. I think doctors pretty unanimously say vaccinating against getting your MMR booster is a pretty good idea, right?
Yeah, but
and so do we not trust them? Do we think?
Well,
we know
okay, there's an ongoing lawsuit against, I believe it's Pfizer, that they overstated the efficacy of their. Was it measles?
Yeah, I think it was the MMR.
It was one segment of the MMR, and I believe it was the measles segment, was not providing the protection that they claimed it was.
Is this in the modern era or is this in the 70s?
This is right now. Okay. Right now. In fact, a recent ruling by a judge allowing the lawsuit to continue.
And a little sub-bullet to that, did you hear, like, for people born in the 70s, not that that's me, that's me.
It's a youngster.
That during the time of the production of the vaccines, during that era, they weren't as effective as later. So you can go get checked to see if you're really fully vaccinated or not.
Okay, so you say, well, we want to trust doctors and we trust science, but it's not an absolute.
No, but there's a far cry from saying, oh, let's just not vaccinate at all because of my little pet theory about what it means versus the doctor's recommendation.
Okay, so I have a list here of, this is from the CDC.
Exhibit A, entered into evidence.
List of vaccine preventable diseases. There are 27 on this list. However, one of them, monkeypox. There is no monkeypox vaccine.
Let's bring that back. A little throwback.
The vaccine is used for this disease. There's also another one, Lyme disease. Vaccine is no longer available because there was low demand for it because antibiotics treat it effectively, so people just didn't bother with it. Seems like there's another one here. Maybe that was it. But so, Rob, have you had your anthrax vaccine?
Yeah.
No, you haven't.
Okay.
I know you haven't.
Is it a specific thing?
Have you had your cervical cancer vaccine, in Gardasil?
My cervix is hot.
Have you had the Gardasil shots?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You would know if you'd had them.
Would I? My cervix is starting to tingle.
For the HPV?
Right.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
So you haven't had that one. Have you had hepatitis A or B?
I have not.
Why not? Rob, we have a public trust here was a major contributing factor for getting vaccinations, and you are betraying the public trust sit here. Yellow fever?
I am scooting away in my seat, so get farther away from Rob.
How about, let's see, yellow fever, rabies? Have you had your rabies shot? I don't believe he has. I see him foaming at the mouth right now.
I did date an Asian girl in college.
Meningococcal, you had that one? I'm going to guess you haven't.
No. So I guess
I'm driving at a point here. I'm rambling, but I'm driving at a point.
And you got a lot of good terms to say, like monkeypox. So I guess I've gotten the standard cocktail, right? We probably all have gotten the standard cocktail. I don't even know what's in it. I don't even know
measles, mumps, rubella, diphtheria, pertussis,
all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which I presume, maybe I'm a little naive and trusting. I presume that that's what the doctors suggest that someone of my stature should have, right? So well, trusting of the doctors.
So they recommend the kids get them,
right?
Right. I mean, the MMR is like at 18 months now.
Yep.
I don't remember the diphtheria, pertussis,
tuberculosis,
tetanus, all those. I don't remember what ages those are, but.
So taking it a step farther.
Anyway, but I guess what I'm saying,
point, Jeremy. That,
I guess what I'm saying
is
my doctor doesn't suggest I get the Gardasil. I don't know why that is. Presumably, it's based on some sort of scientific health data.
So you want
it's because you don't have a cervix.
Well, but he could still be a carrier.
You and your science.
And
terms.
He could. If you have the HPV, human papillomavirus, your wife could get cervical cancer. So you want to kill your wife.
And she would be pissed.
Yeah.
I'd have to hear about it.
She would be like, where did you get that?
I was like, I don't know. Maybe I just grew it myself.
Okay, so my point is that people want to get high and mighty about these vaccines, yet they don't do everything.
Well, but it's not because of a failing of my moral fortitude. It's just because I'm doing what my doctor thinks is right.
Have you asked your doctor recently?
Presumably based on science.
Have you asked
your
doctor
Well, if I go to my
recently?
Doctor, he doesn't go look at my immunization sheet and say, hey, you really need this Gardasil.
Have you asked your doctor? Last time you've been, okay, why not?
I don't
ask
my doctor anything. Why not? I just hope he doesn't say anything.
If this is so important that we all get vaccinated, why haven't you pressed the issue with your doctor? And even if he doesn't recommend it, because doctors, you know, they have a schedule of things like, well, cost-benefit analysis, and if you feel this is important to you, you press them on the issue and say, look, this is something I want to do.
I don't think it's a hypocritical stance about vaccines. I just feel like I'm doing what they're telling me to do.
That's a very...
Like every 10 years.
Automaton way to exist.
It completely is. Yeah. Every 10 years when they say, oh, you need your tetanus booster, I don't even know what that is. I just stick the arm out. Hit me up. Give me a shot, doc.
So when you click on these links for the vaccine preventable diseases, when you click on the links, it shows you a host of side effects and don't get this vaccine if and don't get it if. And
maybe that's why.
So let's not pretend that, I mean, there's a health risk to getting these. There's a benefit and there's a risk.
I mean, are all of these...
So in this day and age, let's just say that anytime a needle punctures your skin, you are at risk.
Yes.
Period.
Okay.
You have to do the cost-benefit analysis there.
And now when this becomes mandatory... You've lost the ability to do that. The choice is no longer yours.
All right, so for me, the fundamental question is the one that Gary Fox raised in his little rant when he was asking... he said that you should be alarmed that there are so many people openly calling for a government... to be authorized to come into people's houses against their will, haul their kids out of there, and stick them with needles. Rob, is that what you're calling for? Are you one of those people that should be alarming me?
Whoa, I don't know.
Here's another thing to think about. September 11th, after that, mobilize the troops, shipping them overseas, or a couple of anthrax scares. Any... troop that was shipped out had to have an anthrax vaccine. It was not fully approved. This was not for public consumption.
Right.
But you couldn't refuse the vaccine. If you were in the military, it was not an option.
Well, that's, yeah.
So they're going to give them this vaccine that's not quite approved for... because they don't know all the what could happen with it. Do you want that on your child?
On my what?
On your child. Would you?
No, but was it recommended for my child?
You're missing the point of my question, I think.
What's the point of it?
The government, let's say they extrapolate that. Not just the military anymore. Everybody needs this vaccine.
I guess it's an issue of trust. I think they say, hey, these military guys, they're of adult age going into a war zone where there might be chemical weapons. We recommend this. Here's this kid going into kindergarten. We don't think that it's worth it. We don't think the risk reward is worth it to try to put this vaccine into all children.
Okay.
I mean, maybe that's naive and trusting.
Even though anthrax had been mailed to different places around the United States at that time.
Right. Right. They said we believe it's isolated enough in the United States to not risk the mandatory vaccination.
Okay. Let's say you work at the post office.
Maybe.
You vaccinate?
Maybe. Maybe as a condition of your job. Who knows?
So the question boils down to, should you be allowed to make that decision for yourself?
And maybe that question is the great question.
Well, it's a question we explore quite often on the podcast.
Right, because it's a question of whether you're really making the decision just for yourself. Whether it's just purely your own decision or whether you're doing it for your humans around you.
Right. And so, I always come back to, there's a lot of people out there who aren't vaccinated. Who are they harming besides themselves? I mean, isn't this a problem that solves itself? Right? Because they get sick and die from whatever it is they chose not to be protected from. and so, they remove themselves from the gene pool.
And maybe I'm a little uninformed as usual, but I'll speak for the common listener as well. I mean, these people who got whatever it was, measles or mumps, at the happiest place on earth. I mean, were they all were the anti-vaxxer kids making all the other anti-vaxxer kids sick, or was it?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know what the stats are on that.
I didn't get the sense that they were all in their little anti-vax community all sick with measles. I didn't.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's a goofy argument to pin it on the anti-vaxxers. I mean, personally, if I ever have children, I plan to get them vaccinated. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But I get irritated when people act like you shouldn't even think about it, just go do it. I don't like that.
Right, right.
I can agree with that. And I like the way old Gary Fox puts it out there with, like, government people taking your kids away and sticking needles in there, like, that's a little bit of a false.
It's a little hyperbolic.
Right, right, because I don't think that's what's being proposed. But,
not yet.
Well,
but, you know.
What is more likely is saying you can't come into a public library, you can't come into a public hospital, you can't come into a public school, anything, unless you have had these shots. You know, that's what it would look like, right? They're not going to say you can't stay in your little hole and measles it up, but they're going to say, hey, you got measles? You can't come into this hospital unless you've gotten this. I mean, that's the way the government really enforces its power. You, Sean Hannity, Drudge Report types, and, you know, like to think of the government black suit guys coming with their boots on. But what it really is... The way the government enforces its power is it removes your ability to participate in common society without doing what they want, right? The way they enforce educational policy is they don't put a jackbooted guy with an M16 in your school. They just say, oh, we're not going to give you your share of funding, which then makes you collapse. You know, that's the way things work, really.
Otherwise known as oppression. All right. So we're gonna blame all of this on Jenny McCarthy.
Yes.
And then we're gonna take a quick break. And when we come back, we're gonna delve into some listener feedback. And then Rob has a special story he wants to talk about. So stay with us. Okay, we are back.
I want a two-pole, please. And I want Rob to not be completely insane.
That's a great way to start a sentence. I want. See, I need a little more I want. I don't even know what I want.
All right, repeat what you just said, Rob, about... Sorry, we got off on a tangent during the break about guns.
I'll repeat what he said. People own guns because they're afraid. That's what Rob said
in that voice,
more or less.
I think the main driving force for people to own guns is fear,
and that is completely wrong.
That's completely true.
That is,
and so when people say, "Well, I really like shooting this caliber range at this paper target that I'm imagining to be something I really fear, and how I am dominating what I fear," like, I mean,
do you have a fire extinguisher in your house?
I do.
Because you're afraid of fire?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
It's not because you just want to be prepared in the event that you have to put a fire out.
Yeah, I'm afraid of fire. I don't want fire to happen. And I don't really like target shooting my fire extinguisher.
Wait a minute. fire extinguisher does not prevent fire from happening.
No, but it might.
It puts it out once it happens. Have you? Yes. You understand the concept of fire extinguisher.
You're fearing that the fire is going to happen.
You're afraid of your house burning down.
You're afraid of your house burning down. So you're okay. Taking preventative measures.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Except in the case of the fire extinguisher,
I'm good for right now. Thanks.
When it comes to a fire extinguisher, there's very little risk of that fire extinguisher being used in a horrifying way to inflict mass violence upon others, which is a little bit different for a gun.
Why does it have to be mass violence from a gun?
It can be.
It can be.
I haven't heard of like a fire extinguisher school shooting. Just everybody's white running around.
We're getting way off. This all started. He was talking about the Newtown shooting at the elementary school, and he claimed to know that Adam Lanza is that mother had a fear. She was afraid. She owned those guns out of fear. And I said, you cannot possibly speculate on why she owned those guns. You have no idea why. And then he launched into anybody who owns guns, it's because of fear. And that's.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you can sit there and say that.
I can sit here and say it.
You can have that opinion.
What you're
entitled to that opinion.
All day long.
What other reasons are there?
Like I said, sports shooting.
Yeah, I don't believe the shooting. I don't believe the sports shooting.
I own a baseball glove.
You don't believe that anyone sports shoots?
No, I believe they sports shoot because they want to increase their aim in case something bad happens that they will become.
Now,
you don't take it to the.
You don't know enough about shooting.
That could be. I mean, I know there's the biathletes, and they run around with their little.
No, it's not even that. No,
I mean, shooting targets, especially with a rifle, has nothing to do with self-defense, because a rifle is not a self-defense weapon. And anybody who tells you it is an idiot.
Why not throw darts? Darts is fun.
Yeah, I own darts, and I throw darts. And I'm not afraid that I'm going to get attacked by dartboards.
Exactly.
So I own a baseball glove. I'm not because I like baseball, not because I'm afraid 500 baseballs are going to come flying at me.
Now, going to the range and firing your handgun every so often to stay in practice, then, yeah, maybe.
Right.
Maybe you're doing that to be prepared in the event that you need to use it to defend yourself.
Yeah, I could see it being kind of fun.
I wouldn't call that sports shooting either. Sports shooting means something specific.
Right, okay, that's fair. I was lumping that into the sports shooting.
Hunters. Hunters are sports shooters. They're not out there shooting deer so that they can get better at, you know.
Right, that's fair.
Shooting an assailant with antlers.
Well, deadly, all right? When they attack?
Man, there's zillion around my house. They're a little arrogant, too, the deer. You know, they're not afraid.
No.
Like, they just look at you.
We have a deer overpopulation problem here in St. Louis in general.
All right, they get a little cocky.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's rein it back in.
Okay. Let me focus us.
Let Rob get bailed out again. Well, let's talk about deer.
Okay, so real quick, our listener, AJ, actually gave us some feedback about this very episode. So thanks to the miracles of modern technology, we're going to respond to it right now instead of waiting until next episode.
How about that? Real time.
How about that? So our listener, AJ, commented on Facebook. He said this. This is regarding the vaccine issue we were discussing earlier. This is a great freedom to versus freedom from debate where both apply in weighing the individual's freedom to not vaccinate versus others' freedom from catching easily immunized diseases from those people exercising their individual freedom. The market solution would be that those choosing not to vaccinate wouldn't be allowed to enter marketplaces, keeping them away. So I don't believe a mandatory vaccination as a barrier to entry to the general public is evil. But then again, we're only one slippery slope argument away from Big Brother at all times.
There you go, AJ.
Yeah, I once again, very very cogent comments from AJ. The slippery slope thing applies, I think, especially in this case.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you might be able to get a lot of people to agree that it's reasonable to prevent kids from attending school who haven't been vaccinated. But then what's next? You know, those kids shouldn't be allowed to go to the mall. They shouldn't be allowed to go to sporting events or the zoo or anywhere else where there are large numbers of people.
And there's a certain amount of personal responsibility that comes into play when you have a cold or the flu. You stay home. You try not to expose other people. You see this in other countries.
It's called
Japan,
common courtesy.
They're wearing the masks.
Right.
So let's not have to have a hammer on us forcing us. Let's take some responsibility and do what's right. And of course, as you see, there are different levels of what people believe is right to do. Hence the whole argument of vaccination versus not vaccinating.
Right.
But so do you stay home from work? If you have a cold, how bad does the cold have to get before you stay home from work?
Not for a cold.
No? You're exposing your coworkers, and maybe some are more sensitive to it than others.
I guess it would depend on the symptoms. But I mean, if I just have a stuffy nose and I'm sneezing.
Yeah, no big deal to you, but for somebody with asthma, it'd be a huge deal.
Maybe.
I mean, think of who we used to work with.
I generally follow the same rule that we apply to our kids. If our kids have a fever, then they stay home. We don't let them go anywhere else where they might infect other people.
What's the threshold on that fever, Jerry?
Anything above 99 degrees.
All right. I don't know. Seems like you could be jeopardizing your coworkers here, and you know maybe they're out of sick time, so then they have to take time off without pay. Now you're impacting their livelihood. This is a slippery slope, Jerry. Slippery slope. Adam Carolla loves the slippery slope argument, by the way. He doesn't. He hates that argument.
We're going to have Adam on the show sometime.
Oh, that would be dream. That's drop the microphone, retire, do something, because that would be it for me.
All right. I'll send him a note.
Oh, Jerry's going to work his connection.
That's right. Okay. I'd like to cover some listener feedback from our last episode. Our listener Mike wrote us and said, well, first of all, this was regarding two episodes ago. We talked about voting and the fact that, you know, I don't vote and I don't think other people should vote. And Mike challenged me after that episode, and I responded to his comment, but I did not satisfy him, so he had this to say. Come on, you did me wrong, sir. I finally caught up on my backlog process episodes, and while I was happy to see that I made it past your rigorous screening process to have my comment read on air, I feel like you straw-manned me. I commented on one, and only one, of your arguments against voting, and you responded with a rebuttal focused on another argument. It's been a while now, so hopefully I'm not misrepresenting you, but my memory is that one argument you had against voting was that it is pointless because a single vote doesn't matter. I commented on that opinion and acknowledged you had other facets to your argument I wasn't addressing. Your rebuttal, again paraphrasing, was that voting and the marketplace are dissimilar, because choosing to buy or not buy something does not violate someone's rights, while voting does. That may be a valid reason not to vote, but my argument was against your claim that voting didn't matter. Not that it didn't violate some people's rights. You use misdirection in your response. For shame, sir.
I like the end.
Signed, Disillusioned Mike.
Mike, come on, Mike. Don't be disillusioned.
Okay. So, I certainly cannot give our listeners reason to accuse us of intellectual dishonesty. So
there's a lot of it.
We're yeah, whoa, right.
Not willing to sign up to that.
So let me give this the rigor it deserves. In a 2005 essay in the New York Times, the economist Stephen Levitt and his partner Stephen Dubner, this is the pair who went on to write the popular book Freakonomics and now have their own popular podcast.
They what wrote is a popular podcast. I'm not familiar with it. I'm not experienced.
Freakonomics?
No, a popular podcast.
Oh, right. Hey, we have a popular podcast. Yeah. Come
all
on.
All right, go on.
So they wrote an essay in the New York Times called Why Vote? And I'll put a link in the show notes. Anyway, their conclusion as two well-respected economists is, quote, a rational individual should abstain from voting. All right, so from a purely economic standpoint, there's no value in voting for an individual to vote, okay? And to think otherwise is irrational.
Rob, that means you can vote still.
Now, they go on to say in this essay that the odds that your vote will actually affect the outcome of a given election are very, very, very slim. This was documented by the economists Casey Mulligan and Charles Hunter, who analyzed more than 56,000 congressional and state legislative elections since 1898. For all the attention paid in the media to close elections, it turns out that they are exceedingly rare. The median margin of victory in the congressional elections was 22%. In the state legislature elections, it was 25%. Even in the closest elections, it is almost never the case that a single vote is pivotal. Of the more than 40,000 elections for state legislator that Mulligan and Hunter analyzed, comprising nearly 1 billion votes, only 7 elections were decided by a single vote, with 2 others tied. All right? So let me respond to Mike's question more directly. I sometimes shortcut the discussion by referencing some story in the reading room. I'd encourage all of our listeners to read everything that we tell them to. But I recognize that this isn't always practical. So rather than assume that everyone listened to the interview, let me pull out a few of the key points. I link to this in the show notes for that episode. I'll include it again in this episode. The NPR show, To the Best of Our Knowledge, interviewed a Georgetown philosopher, his name is Jason Brennan, in an episode called Against Voting. And Jason Brennan said, quote, there are other things you can do that are more valuable than voting. And I think this is key because we are all assaulted on Facebook and elsewhere by this notion that failing to vote is somehow shirking your civic duties. And this is blatantly false in an almost offensive way. One can be civic-minded and interested in their fellow man's well-being and in improving society without ever having entered a voting booth. So we need to work on rejecting this idea and do away with the cute little I voted stickers. The main reason being, it encourages people to feel a sense of accomplishment by simply pulling a lever. They can't dust off their hands and say, well, that problem is solved, without ever having to do any of the hard work necessary to solve it. And if your side of the issue isn't picked or your guy doesn't win, you have even more work to do. So for a civic-minded person, mere voting should seem like the lazy way out. That is the message we should be promoting, in my opinion.
I don't...
Now, let me finish.
But I have...
Yeah, Jason Brent. Okay,
I like
just save him.
Was about trying not to have intellectual dishonesty.
Jason Brennan goes on to say that people voting are incompetent, ignorant, irrational, and morally unreasonable. Now we've covered this in the past, so I won't delve into it again. But Brennan takes it a step further and asserts that people can be morally unreasonable in their voting choices. I think that's valid. And dovetails well with my position that voting can actually harm people, depending on the issue.
But
okay, let me finish. Here we go. Home stretch here.
Ugh, can't take it.
His last quote.
Hold on, you can do it.
One individual vote doesn't make any difference, and that is why people are likely to vote badly. because the consequences are so small, unquote. And here is the bottom line as far as I'm concerned. Because everyone seems to innately understand that the odds of their single vote affecting the outcome are incredibly slim, and the act of voting carries no psychological weight, so they approach it the same way they approach deciding what to have for lunch.
Hey, I take lunch very seriously, all right?
Garbage. I agree with Mike. Way to go, listener Mike.
Yeah, I think Mike's
what,
on to
what is
here.
Garbage
I feel like
about
you're
that?
Still intellectually dishonest. I feel like you're distorting the... And again, you bring up the harm and the voting badly. So what if it doesn't matter, then what's wrong with voting badly?
I don't like your rebuttal.
Well, so voting badly... It's worse than not voting at all.
But if voting doesn't matter, then they should... What's the difference?
Well, it doesn't... People have it in their head that it doesn't matter because it so rarely decides the outcome of an election. And that's just a mathematical fact. And
well,
we all understand
that. If you talk to Al Gore,
that.
He thinks voting is pretty important.
You know, it's the same odds of winning the lottery that your vote is going to decide the outcome of an election.
It's not anything like that. I don't like Jeremy's rebuttal. That's rebuttal A.
Okay. Go ahead,
Rob. You're over there playing your chess game again while we're trying to have a podcast.
Losing
so
a chess game.
Get in on it.
Rebuttal A is you can't simultaneously say voting doesn't matter at all and then say voting badly matters. That's rebuttal A. Rebuttal B is...
So voting badly happens when a large number of uninformed voters vote the same way, and then perchance they decide the outcome.
I guess that's what...
Go ahead.
This is where we get to, again, a constitutionalist argument versus a kind of a non-governmental argument. Like... From the constitutional perspective, that's just, for better or for worse, that's what we all decided we were going to do. We were going to all vote, you know? And you know, at some point it was landowners who could vote, you know? But maybe they voted badly, too. I mean, I think we just said, hey, we're just going to let the people decide. Maybe they'll all decide stupid things, and then we'll all just go down the stupid path. You know, but that was, you know, that's what democracy is, right? It takes the risk of having a bunch of stupid people decide something stupid, right?
Yeah, that's...
Congress. That's what we all signed up for.
I agree. And that's right. Why I'm vehemently opposed to democracy as a form of government.
So I had a fever dream during this rant of incorrectness. And I was thinking of a parable I told myself of a once a year flood that came. It always came on the same day, Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th in February. Always the same day. Every year in my parable, it's always the same point of the day, every year. Anyway, this flood comes, and there's this little town by the river, and everybody's job, they could thwart the flood. All they have to do is they have to fill up one sandbag, take it to the wall, and put it on the wall. That's all they have to do. If everybody does that, if enough people do it, if the majority of the community puts that sandbag there, the community is safe. So now is any one particular person's sandbag going to be the one that stops the very last water molecule to come over and save the dam? No. But as a community, if everybody does their part, you make something that means something meaningful. And it's a little bit like it's a little bit of a math. It's a kind of a math problem about what multiplication is, right? You're equating a large number of people doing a small act equals something meaningful. And you're saying, no, the only way it's meaningful is if one person, that being you, is the one person that makes the large act. And I don't think it has to be that way. I think the product ends up being the same, that a community of people can gather together and make a stand. Everybody can put their little grain of sand into the hourglass and represent something that's meaningful. Rebuttal
that's
B is
the most
way,
beautiful thing Rob has ever said. And I agree with what he's saying.
That's,
oh my
that's the most
goodness.
Beautiful thing I've heard.
All right, let me write this down. Jeremy agrees with Rob.
Except he tried to steal from something I said the last time we discussed voting. But that's fine. He does that a lot.
That's because I'm learning from you.
I doubt that.
All right. Well, so if you think there's a mathematical argument to be made here, you need to take it up with the economists. because they disagree with you.
Right, and that's really what they're saying here. They're like your chance, your probability that you are the last one in there to decide a close election is so small that you should just not bother. And it, I just don't.
You are a chump if you participate.
That's what,
because you are expending energy, time, and effort to participate in a process that you have no chance of influencing.
That's the conclusion's wrong. You have no chance of being the last one that influences it.
It's like the game-winning RBI stat in baseball.
How so? Tell me. I love. Tell me.
I don't know that they even track it anymore. But if a team won 11-2, the guy who drove in the third run for the winning team got credited with a game-winning RBI. Okay. Even though there was this avalanche of runs right. that scored after that one, that was the game-winning RBI.
Right.
That set the tone for those other eight runs to score. If that one didn't happen, then another run
right.
would score.
Right.
And so I think that maybe supports your argument a little bit more, Jerry, but being a team game, the collective effort, you keep hammering away because you don't know what's going to happen.
And your voice is heard. Like for example, if we want to think of like Todd Akin and versus Claire McCaskill, right? He was ahead.
I'd rather not think about those.
I'd rather not think about either one of those people.
I would rather think about it. But that's a great example. So he came out there. I mean, he was ahead in the race before he gave his good old legitimate rate comment, right? And then Claire McCaskill won. Maybe by a wide margin, maybe by more than one vote, right? Well, what was the message, the fact that he got landslided? There was a message, like if he lost by one vote, they're like, ooh, that was a close one. But by the fact that he got landslided, sent a message to people on that side that said, hey, easy there, Tiger, with the legitimate rape stuff, you know? So those votes, even though one person's vote, it wasn't decided by one vote, everybody putting their little coin in the little bucket, all sent a message that meant something to politicians and pollsters and consultants and marketers. And
so that's easy to say in retrospect because your guy won.
She did. She's awesome.
What if Todd Akin had gone on to win in a landslide? Would that have sent him the same message that
no, it would have sent
he's right?
Yes, it would have sent a it would have sent an equally.
Because no, he's not right. I mean, we all agree that he's an idiot and what he said was wrong.
Well, don't think about
but
right
if he had
and wrong.
Gone on to
don't
win
talk about politics.
If he had gone on to win, though, the message would have been loud and clear that they support him and they support
yes,
what he believes
exactly.
in.
Exactly. That's how it's supposed to be. Now, I'm not saying right or wrong, but that would be the community saying, yeah, what's with these rapes being all claimed to be legitimate when they're really not? That would have been a voice of the community. It would have been just as legitimate to say.
Okay, but wrong nonetheless.
But wrong in our view, right.
And
what? Right,
and that's exactly
right and
what I'm saying is that the vote would have been morally unreasonable.
We're getting somewhere on this podcast.
The voters would have been sending a message that
right.
was morally unreasonable.
Right, this is a theme. This is the theme of the Midwest Peace Process.
Does that matter?
I think it matters a lot.
Then voting matters.
Well, it matters in the sense that
you're playing a game.
Yeah.
Right.
That.
Jerry's trying to get us to all look at what is true, capital T true and capital R right, not what wins an election or what the consultants say,
right?
You know, and the way the Constitution is set up and the way the country is set up doesn't say we shall all vote for what is true and right. It says let's just pick some stuff.
And this isn't just me. There's plenty of evidence. There's plenty of examples throughout history of this. I bring up Rosa Parks quite often on the podcast because that was an example of something everybody agrees now was wrong. She stood up against the law, against, the conventional wisdom at the time, and it changed. Same with the fugitive slave laws. Those laws were eventually repealed because juries refused to convict people who were being tried as a result of them. And there's a higher standard here.
Right.
It's not just what the law says. It's not just what a 50.1% majority says. There's a higher standard.
Yes, there
so,
is.
So this is one of those cases where voting can harm people. It can violate their rights.
But there, you're changing the argument again.
No, I'm not.
Yes. This is, does voting matter?
Does a single vote matter? That's what Mike was calling me out on, because I said that a single vote doesn't matter.
All right.
I think to sum up, if I may, I think we're saying it matters in this artificial game we're playing as a nation, in this little kind of government construct we have. And in that case, it matters, and it matters to consultants and marketers and politicians and pollsters, and it matters in those sorts of ways. But does it really seek, does your vote really seek to drive what is true and good? I'll agree, it doesn't. It's just a little...
In the cases where you're voting on, directly voting on a policy, you know, a referendum kind of vote,
yep,
then that's just dangerous.
Yeah, right.
And in the cases where you're voting on a candidate who has already expressed his position on those policies,
right,
you're indirectly voting on the policies themselves.
Sure. Right.
And that's almost as dangerous.
Yeah. I think it's a fair way to see it.
Especially when the candidate, nobody in particular, lies about his position on those things or, and doesn't follow through on
or
what
communicates,
he promised.
Or communicates one position to get elected, and
sure,
then once he's in office.
I think it's all becoming clear. I'll allow one final analogy to close the episode, because I get the last word.
You said we're closing the episode. We didn't talk about your park thing yet.
I love my
photographer.
Park.
Go on.
It's a little bit like being a sports fan. Like I love my Cardinals. Good hometown team. You know, I watch them on TV. That gives them ad revenue. I go to the game and buy nachos for $9 because it's what I do. And I feel like I am putting my little part into the organization and into the team that helps them win. And it's kind of silly. And if I'm at a game and I really need John Jay to get a hit, and I feel like he needs my support of yelling towards John Jay to get a hit, I yell. I am exhorted to yell upon the John Jay to please get a hit. You know, it's my one little voice. Now is he like, "Rah, are you there yelling for me? Because I really need a little motivation right now." No. But I'm putting my little voice in there, right? And so I feel like maybe that matters. Home field advantage matters.
What you're really saying is you believe in magic.
Exactly. Exactly. So I yell, and I'm in a community that all supports this thing, and I feel like that really matters. Home field advantage matters. John Jay wants to stay here and avoid his arbitration deal, you know, because maybe I yelled that one day, whatever it is. Right?
Well, he didn't avoid arbitration, but that's fine.
Whatever. Something happened with arbitration. Anyway, John Jay's still a Cardinal. Go, John Jay. We need to hashtag John Jay on this episode. Okay, so that's all true, and I completely believe it. Now let's take a step back. Does baseball really matter? We're talking about hitting a ball. We're talking about hitting a ball around, and it's some company. The Cardinals are a company.
Yes.
And I am, like, putting my heart and soul into some company's profit margin and some rich dude that really
I
think he wants to win baseball games for St. Louis.
Not only that, but you are participating in a proxy war, right?
Yes, it is, because I really hate people from Pittsburgh. So... And this is a little bit like the voting thing. It's like it completely matters in what you see as the artificial construct of this government and this voting thing. But if you take a step back and you say, like, what are you guys all doing? You know, that's my point. It's beautiful. I'm beautiful tonight. I'm a beautiful man.
So the thing that you find beautiful at the large scale breaks down considerably at the micro scale, on the one-to-one scale. Because the vote could be that, you know, every Tuesday we're going to execute somebody with red hair. Right? And, you know, an overwhelming...
Done. Get rid of them.
An overwhelming majority voted for this. Right? But when it comes down to it, next Tuesday, you're the executioner who has to throw the switch on the red-haired guy. Can you do it? Are you justified in doing it? Doesn't that make you a murderer?
You raise good points. He raises good points.
But that's still voting matters.
If voting... It matters.
Voting has a consequence.
Because it could be evil.
Yes, right. But that's not... This is not a good versus evil argument. He's saying... Your position was one vote doesn't matter.
I think he's saying... I think Jerry's saying...
And Mike is saying, yes, it does.
Jerry's saying you can't enact good. You can't enact your...
I'm good.
Your worldview. I'll have a small one. You can't enact your...
I'll take it. Yeah.
You're saying you can't enact... You can't... People vote oftentimes for some kind of altruistic reason. We feel like it's the good of the country, it's the good of the people, whatever it is.
Right.
And I think what Jerry's saying is that if you want to do that, if you want to be altruistic, if you want to advance the country or your community, voting is a pretty crappy way to do it.
Yeah, there are much better ways.
Now, he's not saying it doesn't matter.
He's saying that
it has no truth.
Right, we beat this. Let's move on. This is...
All right.
Oh my gosh.
Tell your time for my park
absolutely.
Story.
Absolutely,
oh,
tell
yeah,
your story.
A great story.
All right, in the reading room, if Jerry posted, because I don't understand how the reading room works. There was this great article.
We've only been doing this for what 3.5 years. Man. Rob still hasn't figured it out.
It's hard. It's the internet, probably all of that.
It's a series of tubes.
It is, and I can't find the tube. Anyway, so there was an article in the Post-Dispatch. That talked about a professional photographer who wanted to use the park in Twin Oaks, which is a really tiny town close to where I live. It's a real tiny town with one park. The park is immaculate. I don't know why it is. It's just fantastic. There's bridges. There's a little pond. There's like the best basketball court in the universe there. There's a sand volleyball court. Anyway, doesn't matter. Okay, so this lady wanted, with a libertarian bent, as it turns out in the article, wanted to use the bridge for her professional photography of portraits, weddings, that sort of thing, which was against the rules of the ordinance of Twin Oaks, and so the reason why I enjoyed it so much and it made my heart a flutter, and is probably more closely aligned to the vaccination part of the episode, is that her main claim was that, well, this is public land, I can do whatever I want with it, you know. And there should be no rules that govern my libertarian sense of what I want to do to the public land, right? So her in her libertarian sense felt like this is land that's just there, and why can't I use it? Well, why is she using it, one might ask? Why is she going to that park? Because there's lots of public money that made that pond that beautiful, that made that bridge that beautiful, that cultivated the grass behind her portrait to make it that nice. And if you want to play the libertarian card that you just want to go wherever you want on free public land, hey, there's some beautiful land down by the Merrimack River. You can, you know, some Katy Trail with some old dark rocky cliffs. You know, there's lots of free land out there that you can take your wedding portraits on. Why do you want to take your wedding portraits at that? Because the public all got together and made a beautiful space. And with that comes some rules that you can't bust in a bunch of wedding people into the park when kids are trying to play and make money off the fact that we've provided a nice place for you to be. And that just summarizes to me the liberal versus libertarian argument. It's not a great argument for a liberal and public community kind of argument, but I think it's a decent dagger against this sort of libertarian mindset of please let me take advantage of your beautiful bridge and flowers and cultivated landscapes in any way I want, but I will fight against any tax or any responsibility I have for creating such a public land.
Well, wait. Well, you fight against a tax. You just said it was paid for with public money, so theoretically there's already a tax that she's paying.
Right, which okay. I'm sure this lady hates paying.
There you go.
If she's not a resident of the jurisduction, she didn't pay any money to build the park in the first place.
So which is possible, but...
Why can't the people who built the park put this rule in place?
But I wouldn't say that that's a libertarian stance.
Why not?
Well, because a libertarian doesn't believe there should be public property in the first place. All property should
right.
be privately owned.
And I
agree she probably that. Wouldn't object to paying a small fee in
right.
order to book
right.
the park and use it for
and,
what she
and,
wants.
Right.
And but that's not an option.
We should get this lady on the show and hear what she has to say.
Yeah,
because she's really, because in reality, she is misrepresenting the libertarian argument. To show up in a public park as a libertarian and expect it to bow to your own free will, I mean, that's like going into the evil lair, right? A public park is almost like a sacred church to the government, right?
I think you are way overstating a lot of this.
How so?
And sensationalizing it, but
how so?
Well, so my question would be, yeah, public funds built the park, but was the public actually involved in making this rule that said it couldn't be used for commercial purposes? Or was that just some bureaucrat who works for the city?
Who was publicly elected.
Who said, you know, hey, I don't think photographers should be allowed to go in there and make money off a public park.
If you read the article, I'm not sure the ban on that was from the beginning. And this is a problem. This is not unique to this park. This has been something that's going on around the country.
Yeah, I didn't know this was the
first
I heard about.
If not just the St. Louis area, I believe. No, it's...
Photographers everywhere complain about this.
Yes, because they're required to, some places have started requiring they get a permit, and you know, they have to pay for the permit, and they're saying, hey, wait a second, this is, again, public land. And
that's right, thanks.
If you don't drink it all, I won't judge you. Are you guys okay?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, this is not an isolated case.
Well, that's interesting, because
I was in a wedding about a year ago.
Of course you were.
Of course I was.
Just this random handsome man. They just hire you in.
Right. So part of we took pictures at the Muni, the Forest Park. It was a cold day. We were kind of getting tired of all the pictures, a lot of standing around and a lot of, you know, now everything's digital. So they take a picture, look at it, take another one, look at it. But another wedding party came up. They were waiting for us to get finished, and most of us are like, all right, you know,
it's good enough,
let's wrap this up. Right. We've had 100 pictures, and it's cold, and there's another wedding party. But the photographer just kept, okay, now I want this and this. And where does it end? There's a – maybe these ordinances that say you have to get a permit or we don't allow it at all, maybe they don't happen if there's a little bit more judgment on the part of the users – to not take advantage of a situation. And that goes in many cases of human interactions.
Right.
There's such a wide spectrum of what is acceptable that you get into these situations where somebody has to step in and say, all right, we need to ban this because it's out of control. And they even talked about that in the article, that commercial photographers, for lack of a better term, were becoming a nuisance.
Right. Yeah, it's right. Because it wouldn't really be a thing if it was just was, hey, you show up and you take a picture and you know, you go to the parking lot and somebody slips you $20. You know, it's not that. Yeah. It's the buses of people and the, you know, the...
It's the tragedy of the commons.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. But I and this lady, again, a thing I try to avoid is to take the stupidest people and that voice and opinion that I disagree with, and then hold them up to the high standard of that entire opinion. So I don't want to go too far with this, but this lady with her libertarian argument, like, why can't I use the public park any way I want? It made my heart skip a beat.
All right. Any stories in the reading room we want to highlight?
Oh, my. Well, let's see. There are a couple in there on climate change and, you know, whatever. Well, I think I'll just read one of the headlines. NASA climate scientists. We said 2014 was the warmest on record, but we're only 38% sure. So, you know, that's probably misrepresented a little bit. I forget the actual article, but that was the headline.
Okay.
U.S. Attorney General bans asset seizure by local police. That was a decent article and one of the better things Eric Holder's done, or one of the only good things he's done, maybe. I don't know. David Clark, Wisconsin Sheriff. Quote, Al Sharpton ought to go back into the gutter he came from.
Ouch.
That was out of the Washington Times. And last one I will mention. Attorney for Michael Brown's family was also head of a troubled police department.
Yeah, that was an interesting story.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either, and wasn't
widely distributed. Right?
Yeah, it was Pine Lawn, which is...
A neighboring community.
Yeah.
Troubled?
Troubled, and for somebody who's railing on a troubled police department who was in charge of one that was troubled, maybe we ought to turn the microscope on yourself once in a while.
So I got a few I want to point out here, and this one applicable to what we were talking about earlier. How to get credible knowledge in a myth-filled world. It was an interesting essay about, you know, who we trust, why some scientists, you know, we listen to some scientists and some we don't.
It's a very modern quandary.
Yeah,
I
right.
mean, maybe last 10 years or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I think before then, if Dan Rather, your boy
oh,
Dan
see,
Rather.
Oh, you just brought something. I can't believe we didn't talk about Brian Williams at all.
Yeah, we did. Well,
oh,
next
man.
Episode.
No.
But I think back
Rush,
in the,
we got to, come on.
Back before the internet, I think if it showed up on the news, I mean, you always had your quandaries about bias or whatever. But, like, the news was the news, you know?
Right.
Like, if they said vaccinate your kids, you would just vaccinate your kids. You wouldn't. You couldn't search for troves of information.
Right, and the opposing viewpoint,
right,
and,
right.
Yeah. Another one, I put a link in here to an essay called I'm an Anti-Breaker, which is some brilliant satire about the anti-vax movement.
I liked it.
I thought it was pretty good.
Whatever.
I mean, whether you agree with it or not, it was very well written. And then lastly, a link I just added today, it's called A Death in Valdosta. And this is a story we haven't really talked much about on the show, but there was a 17-year-old high school kid in Georgia named Kendrick Johnson who was apparently murdered. I'm going to go ahead and say it. He was murdered. And then they rolled his body up into a wrestling mat.
I remember that
story. And hid it in the school gymnasium, and he was found... some point much later after it happened, and the first autopsy was botched. The family paid to exhume his body and have a second autopsy done, and the second autopsy has revealed some pretty interesting things. So
and they tried to claim he dropped a shoe in there and reached down
right.
and got stuck and nobody noticed, so he suffocated,
right? And which there are all kinds of holes in that story. Anyway, there's now a person of interest that the local police want to talk to, somebody that Kendrick Johnson had gotten into a fight with previously. So this kid is white. Kendrick Johnson is black, by the way. This kid is white. His brother was also involved in that fight. Mm-hmm. It occurred on the school bus. And then both of these kids' father is an FBI agent.
Interesting.
So, I thought that was interesting. So that's all I got.
We can't close. We have to say something about Brian Williams.
Okay.
And
what do you got?
All right. The only what I will say after this came out, there were a couple of Facebook posts. One from a friend of mine who works for a TV station in South Carolina, and he just posed the question: what do you think should happen? Keep him, get rid of him. I posted, get rid of him, credibility is gone. You cannot make up stories like this and expect to still be a legitimate newscaster.
Yeah.
I don't think you can, and I don't, beyond that, I think it's morally wrong what he was doing.
Why do you think he did it?
Ratings,
self-aggrandizement, everything evil.
Yeah,
okay,
I'm speculating. I mean, I understand. You asked me why I think he did it. Why would you do it? You want to be in the story, you know.
Two things.
Okay.
First prediction: Brian Williams will be the next host of the Daily Show, and Jon Stewart will take over anchoring the NBC Nightly News. You heard it here first, folks. There's the prediction.
Wow.
Number two.
I like that.
I think this has been blown way out of proportion.
Okay.
From what I've read, the first time Brian Williams told this story, he told it accurately. But that was a long time ago, like right after it happened. You know, and this incident is, what, 12 years old or something at this point. I'm not excusing him for having, you know, misrepresented it on the news, on TV. I think that was a major mistake on his part. Is it bad enough for him to get fired? I'm not sure it is. So.
All right. Well, second thing, somebody commented on the story after I wrote that. Are you crazy? This is all speculation by the media. We don't know anything. Like, no, he came out and said this was...
Right. He admitted that
I made up this story.
Mistakenly reported it.
There's the... You know, I didn't even respond. Clearly this person's an idiot. Because you don't even know what's going on. But
hopefully they don't listen to the show.
They don't. They don't have technology other than Facebook where they are. So. But the other piece is a comment from another thread I saw where somebody responded, well, so what? Fox News is still on the air.
Right.
All right, so now we're going to compare differences of opinion to somebody making up stories.
Right.
You know what?
Well, it's a funny comment and pretty biting, but doesn't really answer the question. Like, I've seen a lot of tweets is like so Brian Williams persecuted about lying about a helicopter in the Iraq War, you know, but there was a lot of other lies that were excused by the press to get to the Iraq War in the first place that, you know, were passed over. That's a funny little jab, but it doesn't really speak to the fact you have a journalist who's supposed to be respected that puts himself at the center of the story, and
it's not that one story. Now they asked him. He claimed he was at the Brandenburg Gate when the Berlin Wall came down. Well, there's somebody doing some research, and no, Tom Brokaw was the only anchor reporting, and Brian Williams didn't even arrive until the day after. So maybe his definition of when the wall came down is...
Yeah, I mean, he was there immediately after and was able to report on the incident firsthand. No, I know what you're saying. But...
Once there's
blood in the water, people are going to find a reason to kind of circle and...
But there should be consequences, too. We excuse lying so much. Politicians, anybody.
I don't deny that. But if we're not going to hold the people we elect to office accountable for lying, why should we hold Brian Williams accountable?
And I agree with that. Yeah. We should hold them. They should be held to a higher standard.
Yeah.
They're not.
I think the side story I've been most fascinated with as I'm scrolling through the Twitter feed is like Brian Williams is probably the last kind of respected nightly news anchor, I guess. I don't know.
I wouldn't say that.
He seems to be like the last big figure in that whole genre. I don't watch the nightly news, but it seems...
No, I don't either.
But, you know, and like taking him down is almost taking down the whole nightly news thing. I mean, do millennials really watch the nightly news? Is that really where they get their information? You know, I mean, do you watch it?
It is the highest rated of the big three broadcast networks.
But it seems like so taking that one down like seems to be, it could be like the wooden stake in the heart of the whole like network, you know, three networks putting on their news at dinner time, and that's where the common family gets their news. I mean, I think older people, that's the way they got their news before, and that's the way they understand it. But
that's something of an anachronism now.
Yep, indeed.
All right, I think we're done.
Yep.
I want to thank our listeners for checking us out again. If you have feedback, please send that to us. The email address is feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com, so send us your comments. Or you can leave them on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter, send them there. We're also on Ello. Did you guys know that? We're on LO.
What's LO? Low Observable? I don't know what that is.
ELLO.co.
Huh.
It's another social network. People are calling it the anti-Facebook because it has no ads. It will never have any advertisement. It doesn't track you. It doesn't save your information, allegedly.
Right.
But most of all, go to our website, MidwestPeaceProcess.com. Check out all the stuff there. We got rants and videos,
and we won't track your data because we don't know how.
That's right.
And if any of you are gun owners out there, why don't you tell me to talk to old Rob here. Maybe you can support his argument. Tell me what you're afraid of. Why you own a gun.
That's right. So we'll collect all those and we'll talk about them next time. See ya.
Good night.
Bye now.